of their colonialism here in the U.S.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for being with us. Professor Roz Siegel, Israeli-American historian, expert in Holocaust studies. We'll link to your Jacobin piece. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, as well as over the entire internet at WUSB.FM. The time is 6 o'clock. The day is Tuesday. And the show is Off the Wall. Stay tuned. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
Well, you know, the new theme, I'm getting used to it, but you have to move a lot faster because it's about a third the length of the old theme. So we have to have all our ducks in a row fairly early in the hour.
Well, it's a talk show, not a music show.
That's true. People often remind me of that. And
one compelling thing, I think, for the shorter theme for me was just the sheer amount of stuff that we want to get to, because we often go off on a discussion of something and it ends up being a good long section or segment of the show. Mm-hmm. So in the interest of having a lot more interesting things to say and more time to actually open up and go off on those discussions, I think that it actually is helpful to us to have that urgency.
I find that radio lends itself to going on tangents because you wind up just, you know, staring into a microphone, not really thinking about who's there, but just feeling the compelling need to just go further into detail and start telling stories. And before you know it, you're telling a story, which leads you to another story, and then you're reminiscing, and you just kind of talk. Oh my God, I'm doing it right now, aren't I? I'm talking about going on tangents, and I'm going on a tangent talking about tangents.
Oh, that's super funny. So what's the first story?
You think it's funny? I think it's a problem. We only have a limited number of minutes to fill here. Okay, yeah, so it's been a rough week. We all know that. Oh my God, I don't even know where to begin, and we're not going to get to everything quite clearly. We'll give it a shot. It's the first week of the second Trump administration has been quite a ride. And I got to say, Kyle, you know, it doesn't feel so much like the other side won as we're living under an occupation. And I don't say that lightly because, you know, I recognize the results of elections and I've often been on the losing side, or my selected candidate has often been on the losing side. This feels different. This feels like we're all being attacked. We're all being basically surprised every single day by some new horror. And, you know, I know there are people out there that still say they support Trump and he's doing what they elected him to do. But every week, I think that's going to get harder to back up. That's going to get harder to say. Because some of the things that we're seeing border on insanity. And a lot of the support that you see from other elected officials, that borders on panic. You know, you're seeing people basically do whatever he says. And these are people in the political world. These are people in the corporate world. These are people who are afraid, really, really afraid. You're seeing it in the media as well. And I don't think we've ever witnessed anything like that in this country. Not recently, maybe the McCarthy era, but people are genuinely scared. Now, we here at WUSB, speaking for myself at least, we're not scared. We're independent. We say what is on our minds. You can agree, you can disagree. That's the nature of conversation. And that will never change as long as this is WUSB. So, you know, it's really unsettling to look out at the news every day and just see how people cave constantly. And it's not just people in this country. The other day, you might have heard of this kerfuffle with Colombia. Basically, as you know, Trump is kicking a lot of people out of the country, supposedly criminals, or what he likes to refer to as criminal aliens or other ignorant terms like criminal illegals or whatever he chooses to describe them as.
Bad hombres.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one in a while, but I'm sure that's up in the list there as well.
It's a deep cut. Yeah, go ahead.
Basically, plane loads of people have been sent to all different countries. And the government of Colombia, or the leader of Colombia, objected to the way this was being done. It was being done by having them sent in a U.S. military plane with all the people handcuffed and treated like criminals. Now, what the Trump people will say is, well, they were criminals. Here's the thing. Not all of them are. Not all of them have been convicted of a crime or even accused of a crime. However, what they do to get around this, they say, well, being in the country without documentation is illegal. Therefore, they're a criminal too. Everyone's a criminal. Everyone we pick up is a criminal. So, you know, one way or another, they're going to cross the finish line with the criminal label attached to these people. And what the leader of Colombia was saying, and I think quite rightfully, is that he doesn't want his citizens being treated like criminals and mistreated on airplanes, you know, not being allowed to go to the bathroom, not having access to any food, and just basically shackled, you know, and it's there's no dignity there. He accused Trump of not treating the deported migrants with dignity or respect. It's Colombian President Petro who said this. He reposted a video on Twitter showing deportees in an airport in Brazil with their hands and feet restrained. And he said, "I cannot allow migrants to remain in a country that does not want them. But if that country sends them back, it must be with dignity and respect for them and for our country." He offered to send his presidential plane to facilitate the return of the migrants, which he argued was more dignified than how the U.S. was sending them back. That alone was what set off our government, the people leading our country right now. The offer to send the presidential plane to pick up migrants led to an accusation that Petro was trying to jeopardize U.S. security and the immediate imposition of tariffs on Colombia, leading to Colombia saying, well, we will impose tariffs too. And basically taking a stand for at least a moment, something that we need to see, something we need to hear more and more of. Unfortunately, it didn't last long. Colombia wound up caving entirely after the unhinged threats coming from Trump. I guess he realized this country could really get hurt. And he doesn't have the highest popularity rating, so maybe he'd be in jeopardy as well. So yeah, send your military planes, shackle our people, torture them, whatever you have to do. Yeah, we're not going to cause you any trouble. Do we feel good about that? Is that what we want? You know, I don't think it was that much of a request. Send our people back with a little bit of dignity. If you have to kick them out of the country, and by the way, there's a lot of Americans living in Colombia without documentation, but I guess we're just going to overlook that. Well, guess what? Coffee prices hit a new high yesterday, despite all this. And you know why? The reason that happened is because when you have this kind of ignorant bravado being thrown around, you know, threats being tossed from one corner to another, it has an effect on the market. Yeah. Future contracts for Arabica coffee produced in Latin America, traded on the Intercontinental Exchange, jumped from $3.48 a pound to $3.49 a pound. That doesn't sound like very much, but it's an 0.5% increase. And by mid-Tuesday, coffee futures moved even higher to $3.53 a pound. So it's going up, 1.7% increase from Friday. When President Trump even makes threats about tariffs, the minute you introduce uncertainty into a global trade system, and that's what global trade is, things are going to get a little crazy, says Dan Gardner, the president of Trade Facilitators. Who knows what he's talking about?
Yeah, the way commodities work, like if you're purchasing on the order of magnitudes and scale similar to, like, you know, a metric ton of coffee, those price fluctuations actually work out to be a lot more substantial than they seem in those figures.
So coffee is now going to be going up because Trump's an idiot. Gas is more expensive than it was under Biden. It's funny how nobody's talking about that anymore. Why is that? Gas costs more. I mean, look around you. I don't really care. I think gas should cost a lot more, but it does cost more than, say, October or September of last year. You know, it was regular, I think, was $2.49. Now it's $2.99. These are facts, at least around here. I know it's different in other parts of the country, but yeah, it went up. Eggs? Oh my God, eggs are through the roof. Record highs. What's going on with that? Look, I know it's only the first week. Sure. Give them a month. Give them 2 months. But at least keep talking about it. If it was such an issue with Biden constantly, you can't just shut up when it comes to Trump. And you can't just come up with excuses either. Like, oh, it's because of bird flu. Yeah, okay, you know what? Biden had plenty of excuses, too, about the global economy and about all kinds of other issues that affected the price of all kinds of things. And you didn't listen to that. It didn't matter with him. So it can't matter with Trump. He cannot lean on any excuse. Sorry. So let's see how that goes. Now, one of the latest things we're just hearing about today, and I don't even understand this, but Trump is freezing all kinds of federal aid starting today. Yeah, and the number three GOP leader, Whip Tom Emmer, never heard of this guy, he basically said in a brief interview that Trump is doing exactly what he was elected to do, which I guess was destroy the country. You're going to see things like this, and your first reaction is going to be, well, this isn't the way it's been done. You need to understand, he was elected to shake up the status quo. You know, a terrorist act can also shake up the status quo. It doesn't mean you have to vote for it. You know, what we have here, we have a government now that is forbidding health agencies from making contact with the World Health Organization. I'm not making that up. It actually is against the rules now to talk to the World Health Organization. How is that a threat to this country to trade information about health? It's sick. I mean, no pun intended, but it really is sick. What is going on there? The DEI programs, you know, I know they're hostile to them, but they're going well beyond that. They're encouraging people to rat out anyone who might somehow be involved in DEI programs that they didn't get already. And if you don't rat them out, you're going to get in trouble. I mean, this is Nazi Germany type of behavior here. Rat out your neighbor because they're using a diversity or inclusive type of a program to do their job. This hatred, this hostility. You guys, you won. You won the election. How about making the country a better place? How about being inclusive? Oh, yeah, I know that's a dirty word, isn't it? You can't use that word anymore? Wow. All right. Well, I don't have any answers. I can't help these people. They just seem to be thriving on all kinds of hatred and ignorance. It's unfortunate. But that's the world we seem to be living in right now.
It's vindictiveness.
There's a lot of vindictiveness. Everybody involved in any kind of investigation against Trump being fired. Inspectors general, unheard of, firing them. It's also illegal. But here's the thing. When you have everybody in your back pocket, you know, they're all going to do your bidding, whether it's legal or not. You know, Congress, they're just going to follow you into the fire. They're so afraid they will do anything Trump says. I'm talking about Republicans, but, you know, Democrats aren't far behind. And then he's got the Supreme Court. So, you know, he can reinterpret everything. He can basically make it all up as he goes along. I never thought I'd see something like this. And I've seen a lot. I've seen Reagan. I've seen Bush the second, I mean. And I even seen the first term of Trump, and it's nothing like this. But of course, we knew it wasn't going to be anything like the first Trump term. Now they're talking about having Trump serve a third time. Yeah, they'll just change the rules to have that happen. Yeah, it's got to be a constitutional amendment, but you know what? Let's change the rules on how to make a constitutional amendment. You know, when you seize power like this, when you have complete control, you can do anything you want. And I think that a lot of people are going to be waking up to that. But I just wonder, when you do wake up to that, what are you going to do then? What's your next move? Are we at the stage where buildings will burn? You know, I always say, at some point, the buildings burn. And, you know, I don't think we're close to it, but it's getting closer. It most definitely is.
Well, and it won't be like a half measure if it comes to that point. like doing a bad job when you've reached that threshold is not in the cards. So, I mean, they want a backlash. They're setting themselves up for it.
Well, you know, I guess I'm impatient.
What is the logical extent?
I'm impatient for the backlash because it doesn't seem like there is any backlash right now. Just a lot of being victims of this. And I guess, you know, part of that is we're still recovering. We're still trying to take it all in. But at some point, it's going to become clear that it's incompatible to have this kind of mentality, this kind of behavior in a democratic system.
But they might just say, like, we're kidding. And then they'll go on with, like, the great stuff. And they'll be like, hey, Democrats, let's, like, do some legislation and, like, you know, really set things up for success. It was like, that was just our, like, fun month. It's like the funny picture, you know?
Yeah, you know, that would be something, wouldn't
it? That's what's going to happen. It'll be fine.
You know, it's
all going to work out.
It's been, you know, just seeing all the people being rounded up, that alone is scary. But when you realize, you know, who these people are, did you see the thing with Dr. Phil? For some reason, Dr. Phil was going along on an ICE raid to find immigrants and get them deported. And this one immigrant or migrant, he recognized Dr. Phil. And Dr. Phil was like, how do you know who I am? You know, he doesn't realize that these are people. These are actual people that watch television. You know, just because you don't have documentation doesn't mean you don't do all the same things that somebody with documentation would do. You know, and I think maybe, you know, if nothing else, during these 4 years, we might get Dr. Phil to realize that migrants are human beings as well as everybody else. And yeah, how did that person know who he was? He turned on the television. He might have been one of his biggest fans. You'll never know.
But what material way is Dr. Phil's life affected by this?
I'm waiting to find out.
Like, how insulated are some... Like, that's the thing that's perplexing to me, is that their evidence or their, like, the reason for their grievance, to me, it's more like a subconscious misplacement of your own... of your own failings, like, of being your own disappointment and blaming someone else for it. I mean, even if you have some daytime television talk flop, whatever he does.
Yeah, I have no idea. I really don't know what it is, what his game is, but it's just, it's kind of sick to see that, to see celebrities just trying to get their face in the shot while people are being victimized, rounded up, sent away. Again, you know, you can comfort yourself saying, well, they're criminals, but, you know, do you really know that for sure? And what kind of crime are we talking about? And do you really care? Because I think most times you just want them out. And, okay, once they're out, then what? What's your plan then? Because these are the people doing a lot of the things that keep our economy going. These are the people that, more than people born here, do not commit crimes, who are living peaceful lives, who are working harder than I'll bet any one of us has ever worked in their lives. You know, we know people that run stores, that run restaurants, that are from other countries, that have to work 3 or 4 times as hard as people who were born here. And they do. And they don't complain about it. And they provide services for us that we benefit from. And this is how we treat them. This is how we treat them. We don't offer them a path that they can become integrated into our society fully and become a valued member of the community. No, we look upon them as the other. We look upon them as the enemy, even though they've never done anything to hurt us. Meanwhile, our own ancestors waltzed into this country without any kind of documentation and, you know, did quite well. But that's okay. That's okay because, you know, they look like us. I really thought, you know, we were past all this, but here we go again.
My prediction is that they'll use the things, those services that collapse from their actions as fodder to further blame people that oppose them. And it will perpetuate whatever lies they spread about the opposition being to blame for the things that aren't working. They'll say, see, this doesn't work now. You don't have fresh produce or whatever it is. And then that will then be recycled back into, well, they don't recycle, but it will be reused as fodder, as I said, to play more of like a blame game. But in total, like blind, in an unrecognizing way of the sort of true extraction of wealth, which is, in my opinion, my humble colloquial opinion, that it's really abundance itself from the middle class or the large swaths of us who don't make full use of the tax shelter system that is our finance in this country. That is like basically corporations and profit seeking, pulling and extracting wealth out of the system through the lowest common denominator, lowest bidder, optimization, streamlining, cost cutting, you know, right sizing, robotics, all of that. Like that, the actual things that are occurring in our economy, the robber barons themselves, basically laughing all the way at us while we basically are at the effect of that blame, that misplaced blame I talked about. And it's cruel.
Yeah, yeah. Donald Trump is a rapist. Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump is a thief. Donald Trump is a cheat. These are all facts. These are all provable facts based on legal documents, based on legal opinions, based on evidence. Those are bad words. Those are very bad words. And yet we have somebody in the highest office who is basically immune from any kind of prosecution, can do whatever he wants. And we're good with that. And by we, I mean the country in general, because we elected him. And there's no denying that. So that is what really is keeping me up at night, wondering how we did that, how we thought that was a good idea, and what the future is going to be. When somebody is in power that doesn't have any consequences for anything they do, what do you think is going to happen, especially somebody as unhinged as Donald Trump? And then you have complete insane people like Elon Musk, you know, getting more and more power by the minute. You think that's going to wind up in a good place? You know, the words diversity, the words equity, the words inclusion, these are good words. These are words that we should strive to have in our lives. You know, 1 week after Martin Luther King Day, have we forgotten what those words mean? The importance of achieving that. Instead, let's delve into Fox News for a second. Attorneys general in 19 states are warning Costco to end all unlawful discrimination imposed by the company through diversity, equity, and inclusion policies.
They're not with that, though.
Costco's not with that, but
no, they're not going to play ball.
But Kyle, listen to this.
No, the framing.
Unlawful discrimination,
right,
is how they are describing diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, it's framing. Hey, I mean,
what kind of crazy Orwellian doublespeak is this? We're taking the good things and saying the good things are bad,
right,
and you will be punished if you try and impose the good things.
I see the temptation.
Oh my God!
I see the temptation from, you know, white male grievance to call it discrimination, but given the history, given, you know, the systemic realities of how certain segments of society are treated and have been historically, like, you gotta kind of not be so tempted. But that's my opinion.
You know what? Okay. You know, for those white people who feel that giving somebody else who has basically come from a place where they have not gotten the opportunities you have, you feel that you're somehow being discriminated against because someone else is basically being looked at first. How about you trade? How about you just get some kind of a sticker or something and go live in that part of the community? Yes, because we are still segregated. And yeah, you'll get the diversity, equity, and inclusion, but you have to live over there. You have to be considered whatever it is that the people who are being given some preferential treatment are considered. Are you good with that? Would you trade that? Would you trade your life today for the life that they have had, where they benefit now from diversity, equity, and inclusion? Because I'll bet most of you would not do that. You would never do that. And yeah, that is what this is all about, you know?
Yeah, and it's, yeah, sometimes unfair to feel like, wow, it, like, I'm being, I get kind of a whiplash from being stereotyped for the way I look, because I look like all y'all. aggrieved white boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of stings to, you know, get treated as though that's who you are and what you believe. But I'm aware that that is because of the sort of systemic, like I said, the attitudes and the stereotyping that has been cast upon people that are not like me. And hey, I mean, I try to be open and smile and, you know, like, be apart from the sort of tropes of and signs and signifiers of racist white guys, but, you know, it doesn't always work. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I can take that. I'm tough enough.
Well,
like,
you're your own individual.
Yeah, I'm not gonna like be mad that someone misinterprets me, well, and I'm okay with like. And I would rather, you know, navigate that personally than live in a society where I feel entitled to actually be the stereotype that I might sometimes feel the sting of, you know, like I would like other people to have opportunities. I would like people to be doing well that are not like me, because I want to learn from them as well. I want to be, you know, as interesting and less segregated. I did not grow up in a very diverse world.
It sucks to be categorized, to be labeled because of the way you look. And it happens to everybody in one form or another. And to be thought of as somebody less than just because you're the same color as somebody else that has proven that is unfair. And it sucks. But it doesn't compare to living an entire life where you don't have the same opportunities, you don't get to live in the same neighborhoods, you don't get to go to the same schools, you don't get to have the same jobs. You know, a lifetime of that. Most of us can't even conceive of that. So, yeah, you know, a little diversity, equity, and inclusion is definitely in order. But now you have attorneys general in 19 states warning the one company that seems to have enough guts to stand up to this crap and say we're going to keep doing it. They're being told that they're unlawfully discriminating and being warned that they are going to be punished if they continue doing this. I mean, that is insane to me. That is completely insane. It's bad enough. It's bad enough that so many of these companies are caving, you know, and basically submitting to Trump's intimidation. But to go after the ones that don't, wow, what kind of a society are we building here or tearing down?
Yeah, and I think that it's less opportunity for people like me to see individuals that are different and have something to offer, excel, because I can list off, you know, female leaders of color, all kinds of different examples. And it's through some of these initiatives, through the urgency of this to, advance that diverse and representative society in various positions in leadership, politics, education, you know, it runs the gamut in business. Having those examples front of mind changes who I am, changes my expectations of white leaders, white male leaders, right? knowing that there are other competent individuals. My worldview is affected by that. If I only see certain examples myself, I have a certain bias that only those people are capable. And it's wrong. It's not true. And so that urgency is not just for those individuals, but it helps people like me understand that sameness is not necessarily a proxy for competency.
Amen. All right, let's get a little more serious here. We have Elon Musk to do look at now. Nazi in chief. Continuing to get fallback for the Nazi salute of a week ago. Feels like a long time ago, but no, it was only a week ago. And you know, he's never denied doing it. Oh, you might think he denied doing it. No, what he did was he mocked the people who said that he made a Nazi salute, and then he started making all kinds of Nazi jokes.
Yeah, it was like he was being all cute with wordplay.
But he never actually said, I didn't do it. You know, if I accidentally made a Nazi salute, okay, the way to deal with a situation like that, if you even can come back from that, is to say something like, oh my God, I didn't mean to do that. That's the last thing that was on my mind. I'm so sorry. If there's anything I can do to undo the damage I have caused by not thinking and somehow making these movements that completely emulated one of the worst symbols of the 20th century, you please let me know what it is. I will do it. You know, and here's $1 billion, by the way, you know, for Holocaust remembrance and things like that. No, he didn't say any of that. Just basically, you know, went after the people on the left, the woke people that see racism everywhere. Well, you know, you don't have to look far to see it when he's in the room. Anyway, the head of a prominent U.S. Jewish civil rights body said Elon Musk's repeated fascist-style salute during Donald Trump's inauguration could act as a spur for violent extremists. The salute itself should be enough to warrant condemnation and attention, said Amy Spitalnik, adding that the ways extremists see an action like this they will take it as a license for their own violent extremism. She is the chief executive of the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, which is a progressive nonprofit founded in the 1940s, headquartered in New York City. Last Monday, she watched with the rest of the world as Musk, the world's richest person and the key Trump ally, spoke in Washington at the new president's inaugural rally and gave two fascist-style salutes. Musk and his followers have sought to brush off the affair, again, never denying it. But to Spitalnik, there was nothing ambiguous about the salutes. No matter how many attempts are made to describe them as Roman salutes or whatever else, it's unbelievable how they are twisting themselves to describe it. There's a long history here, she said. The fact that Nazi salutes are now a regular part of our political discourse is how I got involved with all this. Before JCPA, I led the nonprofit Integrity First for America that brought a lawsuit over the far-right march in 2017 in Charlottesville, remember that, and against the activist Richard Spencer and a variety of other defendants who are clear neo-Nazi extremists. And give the Roman salute is just the euphemistic way of saying Nazi salute. To Spitalnik, most people today don't have a full understanding of what the term fascist even means, and so naming it for what it is, the Nazi salute, feels important right now. And we will not back down from that. It was a Nazi salute. And you know, even if you have the slightest bit of doubt there, listen to his words. Listen, look at his actions. And he will see, yes, it makes sense. Now, the Anti-Defamation League immediately came to Elon Musk's defense after he made the salute and said he didn't mean to do it, without even talking to him, without even hearing anything he had to say. They are so in the hands of the right wing in this country that they felt comfortable doing that. But they're getting less and less comfortable. The ADL has now condemned Elon Musk for making a series of Nazi-related jokes on Twitter, calling it inappropriate and offensive to make light of the singularly evil Holocaust. Now, as I mentioned just days earlier, the ADL defended Musk over the Nazi salute. In the days since, Musk has mocked media outlets and liberals who fanned the controversy, accusing them of a dirty tricks campaign to smear him over his support for Trump. But the ADL says making inappropriate and highly offensive jokes that trivialize the Holocaust only serve to minimize the evil and inhumanity of Nazi crimes, denigrate the suffering of both victims and survivors, and insult the memory of the 6 million Jews murdered in the Shoah. Moving on. Elon Musk's remarks to a German far-right party that Germans should not focus on their country's Nazi past should prompt deep concern about the security of American Jews and of Jews worldwide. Top U.S. Jewish advocate Holly Seufer calls Trump advisors, called the Trump advisor's address to the far-right German rally incredibly dangerous. Speaking as a deeply concerned American Jew, Holly Seufer, the chief executive of the Jewish Democratic Council of America, said, "I am deeply concerned about the security of American Jews, of Jews worldwide, given our president's clear alignment with dangerous right-wing extremists." Musk, as you may know, is the owner of Tesla, SpaceX, and X, or Twitter, or whatever they're called, and is the world's richest person. Has donated hundreds of millions of dollars to Donald Trump's campaign, probably the reason he's in the White House right now. And he's now a close advisor with an office in the White House complex. He's probably the guy who bailed Giuliani out, too. How did he suddenly get the money to settle his lawsuit without losing his apartment or his condo? Kind of a miracle there no one's talking about.
He's paradoxically the richest and most bankrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. In a video address to the Alternative for Deutschland party on Friday, Musk said it was good to be proud of German culture, German values, and not to lose that in some sort of multiculturalism that dilutes everything. And children should not be guilty of the sins of their parents, let alone their great-grandparents, and said there was too much focus on past guilt, and we need to move beyond that.
Is this the hereditary punishment argument?
Yeah, I think it is.
Care about it all?
I think it is. You know, it's, we weren't the Nazis. The Nazis were in the past, and there's nothing we have to worry about anymore. We don't even have to learn about it. Well, you know, you're proving yourself wrong every single day. But it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
Much worse.
All right. Let's lighten it up just a little bit. So you remember the drones over New Jersey? Well, today, guess what? The Trump administration revealed what they are. Carolyn Leavitt, I think she is the new White House press secretary. Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. She said the mystery drones flown across New Jersey were authorized to be flown by the FAA. Let's see what else she revealed here. Is first press briefing, by the way. I do have news directly from the President of the United States that was just shared with me in the Oval Office from President Trump directly, an update on the New Jersey drones. After research and study, the drones that were flying over New Jersey in large numbers were authorized to be flown by the FAA for research and various other reasons. Many of these drones were also hobbyist, recreational, and private individuals that enjoy flying drones. In time, it got worse due to curiosity. This was not the enemy. Are you kidding me? That's the statement. For this statement, Trump and the right-wing media is getting credit for being open and honest and revealing the truth. This is exactly what was said before, except it was said in different words, but all the elements were there. It was authorized drones. It was hobbyists. It was publicity. It was not the enemy. Biden said the exact same things, using different words and not being Trump. But Trump saying it for some reason without knowing a damn thing about it, he gets credit for being open? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's exactly what people said it was from the beginning. He's just repeating what they said. You know, what is it about Trump and Republicans getting credit for things that other people do. You know, the whole infrastructure bill that Biden brought us. You know, all the Republicans were against it, but they took credit for it when it benefited their communities. You know, because they're in Congress, even though they voted against it, they took credit when a bridge got repaired. Things like that. You have the salt cap that our local congressman, Nick LaLota, is taking credit for trying to get that salt cap removed. Well, the salt cap was put in place by his people. Yeah, it was part of the Trump tax rebate for the rich. They put some kind of a limit on how much you could deduct for mortgage payments. And it just, it was completely unfair to working class people. Absolutely, completely unfair. And Democrats knew this. Democrats campaigned against it. Democrats were ignored. But now Republicans are saying, hey, this is unfair. We should override this. We should get rid of it. And all the local media is basically pointing at Republicans for helping to get rid of the salt cap, which is completely the opposite of how the story played out. How does this keep happening? Are we not paying attention? Is this corruption? What is it? It's nuts. Look, I don't want to be too negative here, but people are fighting back. Just last Thursday, a federal judge said that Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship was blatantly unconstitutional and issued a temporary restraining order to block it. Yes, there are still some judges out there. They'll be targeted, no doubt. But for now, they're still out there. Judge John, I can't pronounce this name. It's spelled Koff, Koffinor. Koffinor? Okay.
Koffner?
Koffner? All right. C-O-U-G-H-E-N-O-U-R. How would you pronounce that?
Koffnor.
Koffnor?
Or Koffner, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Koff. Judge John Koffner. You ever realize what a weird name John is when you spell it? I don't know what the H is for. Anyway, John Koffner is a Ronald Reagan appointee who sits in Seattle, your hometown, Kyle. And he granted the request by Washington Attorney General Nick Brown, another friend of yours, and three other Democratic-led states for the emergency order, halting implementation of the policy for the next 14 days while there are more briefings in the legal challenge. This, you know, is Trump's desire to end birthright citizenship. If you're born in this country, you're a citizen. He only wants certain people to be citizens, not everybody who's born here. I've been on the bench for over four decades, Koffner said. I can't remember another case where the question presented was as clear. Where were the lawyers when the decision to sign the executive order was made, the judge asked. He said that it boggled his mind that a member of the bar would claim the order was constitutional. You know, I like hearing people fight back. I like hearing people speak up. And as long as we don't forget to do that, there's hope. And too many are forgetting to do that. Too many are caving in. You see the, how many of these big tech corporations are basically lining up to support Trump now or give him money or whatever. It's really sad and disgusting.
Well, for now, but like when the general strikes hit, I think they'll be compelled to weigh anchor on their support for this, because as I said, like capitulation, sycophancy, fealty to this, it's not going to put you in a better favor. Like, he's already dominating you if you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of your business and your people will you sacrifice or let erode in service of that before you act with what power you have left, with what power you haven't already given up? And I mean, that's a question those leaders will have to make, will have to face, will have to ask themselves straight up. How long? How much will you give all of your company, all of your integrity, or if any, if you have any at all, what is the limit for you? That was a question I think a lot of people asked in the first administration, or as the rise of this sort of populism was occurring, is like, what's the threshold? How much blame will you allow to be cast on you or other marginalized individuals or opposition figures before you call BS on it,
mm-hmm.
and start, you know, leading with your chest a little?
Well, you know, I think we're wrong for expecting people who lead multi-billion-dollar corporations or elected officials to have any spine whatsoever.
But that's our.
I really think that's a mistake to look to them for leadership. We have to look to ourselves for leadership. We have to be the ones to stand up and inspire others to follow and to be leaders as well, because these guys, they're spoken for. They don't know what it's like to have character, you know, to have values, to risk anything. Their job is not to risk anything.
Or to be unpopular.
Yeah.
Like this thing of like the tech industry or profits at all, you know, at all costs, or I don't know if I'm saying that right, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is about being the cool crowd, being celebrity in a tech celebrity, or being lauded, or being in the spotlight. When you thrive on that, or when the predominant part of your identity is tangled up in that, you don't see any other way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in part, I think, how we've hyped and built up these things that, like, oh, you know, everything's based on how well you're doing for, you know, on the public markets, or, you know, whether it's economics or whatever avenue. But this sort of dominance and like being number one, or being someone, all of these things being sort of hyped and inflated as part of that in crowd. And it's, you know, about money, and I've talked about like lifestyle and maintenance and status, and really conspicuous consumption is a huge part of this, because when you have perceived status, you sort of need all the trappings, the signs and signifiers of it to establish that your accomplishments mean something. They mean you can do this. They mean you can have a yacht and sink it and it doesn't matter, or whatever. You know, it's like, all of that we then deify as our own capitalistic American religion of attaining as much material status as you can possibly fit in a lifetime, as though that's all there is to life.
You know, we all have the opportunity to stand up and do the right thing, or just be vocal at a time when perhaps it's not convenient, or a time when perhaps it might rub some people the wrong way. The important thing is to be true to yourself and never to yield out of fear or be bullied into submission. You know, that's something that I take very personally. And, you know, no matter what your opinion, I don't like to see people intimidated into remaining silent. Now, there are many instances where we see exactly that happening, but we also see people standing up, sometimes paying the price, sometimes being triumphant. Jim Acosta was an anchor on CNN. He was on in the morning, somebody who I rarely saw because I'm rarely up in the morning, but he was an irritant to Donald Trump when he was a former White House correspondent. And he continued to call BS on anyone who came on his show and spouted a lot of the nonsense that we're talking about tonight. Well, you probably guessed it. He is out. He has been purged. Well, actually, he wasn't purged. He was moved to an overnight slot. And he decided, no, not going to do that. He announced his departure today at the end of his 1 hour morning show on the network, telling viewers, don't give in to the lies. Don't give in to the fear. Folks, we're all on the same page here. You know, we just have to get together, and we are a force that cannot be reckoned with.
Yo, that is a lesson in self-respect.
Now, CNN will say this had nothing to do with Trump. We all know that's nonsense. All these things happening in close proximity. It's no coincidence. Trump's reaction, of course. Jim is a major loser who will fail no matter where he ends up. Well, let's hope he ends up somewhere where he can do some deep harm to this administration or this occupation. Somewhat related, local Long Island newspaper Newsday is filing a lawsuit against Nassau County government and Nassau County executive Bruce Blakeman and the county legislature as defendants. Basically, they stripped Newsday of the title of official newspaper of Nassau County or county newspaper status. And they claim it's in retaliation for Newsday publishing news and editorials that county officials considered unfavorable. That's according to a notice of claim and complaint made public today. As Long Island's most trusted news source, okay, you know, I have problems with a few of these things, but whatever. Newsday needs to ensure that all media outlets have equal access to all information essential to our audiences. It's according to the publisher, Debbie Krennick, who said this in a statement. The residents of Nassau County have the right to transparency from their government officials, and taxpayer dollars should never be used to intimidate the press and limit information the public needs. Look, I don't know about the label that they're fighting to retain, but I do know that statement rings true. And I do know that Bruce Blakeman is an extremely petty and fascistic mini dictator that is driving Nassau County into the ground with all kinds of ill-advised ideas, plans, ways of just turning the place into a big casino and all kinds of other horrible things he's been doing. So I do not have any doubt that he would act vindictively against a newspaper for daring to criticize. Can you imagine if he found out the kinds of things we say about him? Of course, you know, you're in Nassau County. You have no power in Suffolk County.
Yeah, the fourth branch in journalism has a duty to report things, especially if they're uncomfortable. Anyway, aren't words fun?
They are. And unfortunately, our words have come to an end because we're out of time. We're going to go out, though, since racism and xenophobia are back in fashion. I figured we go out with an old standard that basically points the finger at Portuguese people, Argentinian people, Greeks, and I think even Armenians are in there somewhere. This is a song that can be considered racist from the past, from the 1920s. But this particular singer, Nora Bays, did something a little bit different at the end. While castigating these various immigrants for basically taking all the seats and just being everywhere, at the very end of the song, she adds something that nobody else who did the song had added, and that was the idea that these, perhaps, are the best citizens of all. Have a listen. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and above all else, stay who you are, and don't forget to fight back when somebody feeds you something that is nonsensical or unpalatable.
And you can stay sexy, too.
That's right. That's right. We'll see you next week.
Columbus discovered America in 1492. Then came the English and the Dutch, the Frenchman and the Jew. Then came the Swede and the Irishman, who helped the country grow. Still they keep a-coming, and now everywhere you go, there's the Argentines and the Portuguese.
the Armenians and the Greeks. One sells you paper, one shines your shoes, another shaves the whiskers off your cheek. When you ride again in a subway train, notice who have all the seats. And you'll find they are held by the Argentines and the Portuguese and the Greeks. There's the Ritz Hotel and the Commodore and the Vanderbilt and the rest. All of them are classy, up-to-date hotels. They boast accommodations of the best. When you ask the clerk for a room and bath, he looks at you sarcastically and speaks, why, we're all filled up with the Argentines and the Portuguese and the Greeks. There's the Oldsmobile and the Humpmobile and the Cadillac and the Ford. They are the motors you and I can own, the kind most anybody can afford. But the Cunningham and the Mercedes and the Rolls-Royce Racing 3, they all belong to the Argentines and the Portuguese and the Greeks. There are pretty girls, there are witty girls, there is every kind of a girl. Some you like a little, some a little more, but none of them will set your heart awhirl. When you really feel you've met your ideal, a girl who is smart and chic, you will find she belongs to an Argentine, or a Portuguese, or a Greek. There's the Argentine and the Portuguese, the Armenian and the Greek. They don't know the language, they don't know the law, but they vote in the country of the free. And the funny thing, when we start to sing, my country is a sea. None of us know the words but the Argentine and the Portuguese and the Greek. Thank you.